myself that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So three semi-finals to preview today, lads. So we're going to do it in three parts. They are provincial finals. I think they're all going to be wins for the favourites. So I'm going to start on the one I think is going to be closest, and then we're going to go in descending order until we end up with Dublin and Meath. Okay, so like I think that's what we're going to do. And I'm going to start with Cork Tipperary, lads. I think this is going to be the most competitive game at the weekend. And like, I mean, there's only one place to start here when we're going to talk about Cork and Tipperary, and that's Ger Brennan's apology to the People's Republic of Cork.
Apologies to all you rebels out there listening in. Well, I tell you what I would say, Woody, right, is that Kerry had every opportunity to win by 6 or 7 points, given the conditions, if they were switched on. But you got to give credit to Cork that they were set up in a way that kept themselves in the game from the very, very start, and they gave themselves an opportunity as the match wore on and the couple of subs introduced. I know the game's been talked at this stage, where I think gems of subs to be brought in made a huge difference to the Cork team, and the management of Cork have to get credit for that, because it was obviously a ploy, I would say, that they decided to go with. It was to have the younger, maybe fitter guys work hard and wear down the Kerry team, and then we introduced some of the older, more skillful fellas towards the end, and those fellas made a big difference. So
Now I'm sure you, it's not because you're sore about the 2010 All-Ireland semi-final or anything like that.
Well, that was the game. We were up by maybe 8 points in that match.
I remember it. Yeah,
we were just still that bit naive and green, I suppose, around the years. That Cork team under Conor Hoolihan, they were on the upward curve, and that was the best that they got, and that team, that Cork team, could have won a few other All Irelands, but they never managed to kind of repeat.
Yeah, Conor Cunahan is one.
Conor Cunahan.
So we know that this game, I don't know why this game isn't on Saturday night. The Meath Dublin game is on Saturday night, because the exact anniversary of Bloody Sunday is November the 21st. So mm-hmm. November 22nd is on Sunday. Connor, have you seen the Tipperary jersey? I have to say it's class.
I have, yeah. I think it looks fantastic. Yeah. It's really good, and it's just a nice touch by Tipperary, a nice touch by the GAA, and they've done a lot of good around the commemoration. To be fair, with I think they're lighting 14 candles in Croke Park around this weekend to commemorate the people who died on Bloody Sunday. They've commissioned the Bloodied Field podcast, based on the brilliant book that Michael Foley did. They've done these jerseys as well. I think they're asking the GAA public to light a candle this weekend as well. So everything they've done around the commemoration has been brilliant, and looking forward to seeing that jersey in action as well, because I think it looks fantastic.
Yeah, and you have to give a shout out to Teneo as well, who have foregone their sponsorship in such a big game. They probably don't get an awful lot out of the Tipperary footballers, so the time they do win a Munster final, they have they've taken their sponsor off the jersey, which is the right thing to do. I saw Ian McGuire, Cork captain, talking about this, and Cork wore commemorative jerseys in the league against Derry this year. And he was talking about the extra motivation that it gives. He says, I remember for the Cork Derry game, just a couple of texts that week from players who were going on about the jersey, and you can get extra motivation. I don't know, Ger, because obviously none of us will have had firsthand experience of this, whether there's extra motivation you can get from it or extra pressure. I suppose, again, this is a bit like, are you tired or are you too fresh? We won't know until Monday what the right answer to that is.
I agree with your kind of assessment of it. There is, you can use the word maybe responsibility that you have in wearing the jersey on this particular occasion, and in getting ready for the show today, Woody. I was thinking back to the Ireland versus England rugby match in Croker in 2007.
Oh yeah.
And the emotion that was there on the Irish players' faces during Éireann Na Bhean. and the passion and the power and the spirit that the Irish team displayed in that particular occasion, it's very, very hard to get to that level of performance of All Out Warfare, unless maybe it is an All Ireland final or something like that. And if Tipperary and the Tipperary management are able to use this to their advantage, I think they could be a force to be reckoned with. You'll see fellas putting their head where they wouldn't put their foot, and you know what could happen, you know?
You see, I have some arguments about that, Gerard. Like, I mean, for a championship match, should you not be putting your head where you'd put your foot? You know, why is that extra motive? Where does that extra motivation come from? And you mentioned an All-Ireland final. Like, would you do something in an All-Ireland final that you might not do in a Leinster final? Well, okay, that's not a good example for you playing for Dublin in a Leinster final. Think about another big game that you actually, you know, are worried about losing.
Well, I certainly played every game. Whether it was a bloody challenge game with St. Vincent's, I'll be honest, Willie, to playing for the college, to playing for Dublin, I certainly played the same way nearly always. But you do find an extra bit of energy, an extra bit of something. It's hard to quantify it, it's hard to measure it, but it's just the feeling that you have within. It's a spiritual, emotive response to playing for something greater than just you, and even something greater than just the actual team that are taken to the field, and with that can come an awful lot of momentum. If, like you mentioned at the beginning, if it's used in the right way, if players are able to manage and harness it, what will happen to a couple of Tipperary fellas, no doubt they probably went to their shells a bit, but I think I know what you're saying, Willie. You're playing a championship match for your county. You should be putting in the same effort. I'm not saying that won't happen, but this playing for something bigger than yourself, there's a huge responsibility. There's also a pride that comes with it. There's a fear that comes with it, whereby you might be judged poorly by your kinsmen if you don't put your head on the line. And that itself is another motivator, you know.
I take your point in a perfect. And look at my point was in a perfect world, but every player isn't different. Every player is different, and I suppose, Conor, we've all been in dressing rooms where there's just a feeling in the dressing room. You know, the managers hit the perfect tone, and you know you're running out into that field, and you just feel a little bit different than you did in another championship match. Is that fair to say? And I do think that, like, if Power, the tip manager, harnesses this right and it doesn't go to town on, you know, he could set a tone in a dressing room where these lads are running out in that field for blood.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's occasions that merit kind of, I think there's occasions that merit where, you know, you can be motivated to give that little bit extra than normal, because, like, something that, you know, Ger referenced the 2007 game then, and I'd say even since then, and especially in the GA with all the talk about processes and stuff, is that people kind of people nearly forget about emotion and forget about the effect that emotion can have on a performance. Now, as long as you don't go too far in the other direction and let yourself get too emotional, let that affect your process and the things you do on a regular basis, I think it's fine. And David Power was actually asked about the jersey and just the I suppose playing on such a kind of a milestone of an occasion. He said he put it to the group, and the feedback he got that to wear such a jersey would be an honour and a privilege. He said they'd tap into it a little bit, but they wouldn't go overboard.
Right.
Which is the right way to approach it, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I think it is. Like, I mean, have sports psychologists ruined this whole thing, Ger? Because, like, I mean, they would tell you that the Bull Hayes crying in that national anthem is in no way to prepare mentally for a game. Do you know, and all the emotion, because the sports psychologists tell you to separate emotion from the process, to sound a bit like Jim Gavin, and I'm sure that was the message. But Jesus Christ, like, I mean, especially in a situation like this, there's times where playing on emotion, like, I mean, Jesus, you know, just that rawness, like, I mean, we're human beings, send them out wound up altogether.
It's like, if ever there was an opportunity to smack the Hurley off the desk and to the fellas going out this Sunday, David Power, tactically, you know they'll have their homework done and whatever they work on what they can improve on from the Limerick game, and they focus on Cork strengths and weaknesses and go through that process diligently, no doubt. But I think there's very little to be said when they in the dressing room beforehand on a Sunday, when you look at the history that's there, and the type of jersey that they are wearing, that they will be an embarrassment in some ways. Not that he'll use that word, but as a player, I'd be feeling that pressure. I'm going to be an embarrassment if I don't put my fucking head on the line and do everything that's required to get the performance and to get the right results here without crossing over into the red zone, which can happen without having this sort of, as I know, having this sort of historical significance hanging over you too. But it's like, and again, you said it as well, Woody, and Connor's mentioned it too, like different players are motivated differently. Some guys can maybe become emotionally hijacked and lose sight of what it is you're supposed to be doing. And if there is a bit of a scuffle in the early moments of this game, which no doubt there will be that physical contact there, the tip guys would probably have to keep in check that bit of emotion that they are probably carrying going into the match. But I'm very excited to actually watch the very start of this game, Woody, even the first 10, 15 minutes to see what tip are bringing to it, and to see if the significance of the jerseys and the 100 years history is going to add value to their performance.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Tip obviously beat Cork in 2016. They've played five times since then, and Cork have won all five. Before those games were very close, and Conor Sweeney and David Power have been talking about this during the week, and they often beat them at underage level coming up through the ranks. Conor Sweeney said the fact they were both in Division 3 this year. Conor Sweeney said the fact we've been playing Cork more regularly, we've been in the same league divisions as them in recent years, so you take a little bit of confidence from knowing we can compete with them. And we won't go to town more on the psychology of it, Conor, but obviously Meath coming in against Dublin, Cavan coming in against Donegal, you know, especially how one-sided that Ulster final was. Tipperary will have a lot more belief probably as one of the three underdogs.
Yeah, and just going on what you said there, Willie, I was kind of surprised to see the odds for Sunday as well, which I think Cork are 5-1 on, or Tipper 4-1, especially considering now I know Cork had a brilliant kind of Division 3 league campaign, but they were still in the same league as Tip. And I think it's just like, I think like the mentality of the Tip players, I think, would be really important, because they're not... granted, their recent kind of history isn't great, but they're not burdened with, you know, Cork being the powerhouse that they were, you know, years and years ago. As long as they've played against Cork, they've been beating them at underage, and they've certainly been competitive with them at senior level. Going back to, I think David Power said that their best performance in the league this year, granted it was in February, was against Cork, even though they conceded three goals. So I think that's going to mean a lot to Tip going in against this weekend, like affecting their mentality, because I think in the other games, for example, I think Meath definitely, and Cavan, while certainly it's a provincial final, so they, you know, fancy their prospects to a certain degree, there's definitely going to be something weighing in the back of their minds, knowing that Donegal and Dublin are probably a level above them. Whereas I don't think Tip will have that this weekend. Still think that Cork will probably end up on top, but I think that the odds, especially, are seem a little bit long for my liking.
Yeah, and Colin O'Riordan is back. Like, I mean, he's got permission to play in this Munster final, which is huge for Tipperary. Like, man, this fella is the real deal, and he was the real deal playing wing back before he went to the Aussie rules. Be interesting to see where he plays. Jack Kennedy and Stephen O'Brien are actual doubts for the game, but if everybody's fit, I suppose Robbie Kiley, who's been playing wing back, I don't think he's suited to that. He'll probably play centre back, and Colin O'Riordan will play his usual number five. Bill Maher will probably go back to wing back. Like, I think Tipperary are a decent team. Like, I mean, they're a good team. I think, funnily enough, their manager David Power says for some reason we seem to play at the level of our opposition. We play well against the better teams, and that's not an arrogant thing. I remember Mayo going through qualifiers a lot of times saying the same analysis about them. Jeez, they seem to be able to play at whatever level the team they're playing, you know, they're playing plays at. And they are a defensive team, there's no doubt about that. But usually when you say you have defensive teams, surely Quinlivan will play inside along with Conor Sweeney this time. Surely they'll have somebody. Liam Austin is back fit, holding the 45 to try and link between the two of them. They'll defend with everybody else. They're a big, strong physical team. Like, I think Tipperary are a decent team. We'll get on to Cork in a minute, obviously. But, like, I mean, Tipperary can cause Cork problems. Chair.
Yeah, I know the tip lads fairly well. Colin O'Riordan was in UCD. Liam Casey, Jimmy Feen, Emmett Maloney, Colin O'Shaughnessy. All these lads have played in UCD, so I know them quite well, and they're fairly talented fellas. Whether O'Riordan comes back into the team, I think that could be a big ask to integrate into a...
He's been training with them, you see, Ger. Like, he's been a selector for the last few weeks, so he's been playing. I think it would be crazy if he hasn't been training in the matches with them, maybe, because with a view of potentially playing.
Yeah, no, I've definitely seen him on the line all right for a couple of their games, and no doubt he is a talented player, but going straight back into a full-blooded inter-county game can be challenging. I know we've seen Conor McKenna is probably the best example of any of the lads who come back from the AFL to look like that. He wasn't missing for even a day or two. He was so effective, and obviously Mark Keane, probably quiet for most of the game, but for Cork, but he popped up last minute to get the winning goal. So you know, we will see O'Riordan at some stage. Whether he starts, I don't know. I think it could be a big ask for him, but you never know. You mentioned Wally, how defensive Tipperary are, and Cork played in many ways a similar kind of game plan against Kerry, and. You know, I think there is opportunity there to get at the Tipperary defence, because they do drop off quite a bit and they invite opposition onto them. But then again, if David Powers, obviously he's the manager, he knows the lads pretty well from underage. His success in the minor All-Ireland final against Dublin, I think that was maybe 2011. He knows the psychology of his players, and if his players tend to play better against better teams, well then, you know, they should be able to up their game. But, you know, for me, if I was in the Cork dressing room going into the match the weekend, I'm just looking at nailing Conor Sweeney, Quinlivan to a point, but certainly Conor Sweeney is their main man between frees and general play. I think he kind of is their go-to man, obviously their captain as well. I think if Cork can manage to hold him in the same way that they somewhat managed David Clifford, did your man Morris Shanley, the fullback, was on Clifford last week.
Yeah, he'll probably pick up Sweeney, but like, I mean, Cork don't have any kind of size. Flahev is wouldn't be that big. He struggled on Clifford before. Now, I know this is David Clifford, and O'Donovan played cornerback the last time. He'd struggle. This is why I think Quinlivan has to play inside with Conor Sweeney. I think Tipperary are absolutely crazy if they've Michael Quinlivan playing out the field, foraging around a packed middle third.
I know, I'd agree with you. Like, you're leaving your two marquee forwards inside, but Cork will play certainly one extra sweeper, if not two, and all they'd be looking to do is to break those balls being kicked in, and their sweepers to pick them up. And again, if you're limiting a combined score of Sweeney and Quinlivan, maybe the 5 or 6 points over the course of the 70 minutes, well then that's a job fairly well done by your back four, the two man markers and probably the two sweepers. And going the other way, I just think that's Cork. I thought it was. I'd love to chat to the Cork management when it's over, but I thought it was a very clever ploy what they used. I mentioned at the start by bringing in the likes of Luke Connolly, Michael Hurley and Paul Kerrigan as the Kerry backs weren't as fresh as they would be at the beginning of the game. And those three fellas, along with Mark Collins then as well, had big impacts on that final result.
Yeah.
And I think whether those fellas start against Tipperary the next day, I don't know. But
yeah, I think they will start the next day against Tipperary, and I'll tell you why. I think Cork picked a team to play as underdogs against Kerry. They picked a lot of big men. They want to put all their kickouts out long. They wanted big men to be able to compete for those and win breaks. I think they're favourites now against Tipperary, Connor. I think Markeen will definitely start because, number one, he scored the goal the last time. Number two, he's a great target man. And number three, Tipperary will play a sweeper. And where will the sweeper stand in front of Mark Keane. What's that going to do? It's going to free up Hurley. It's going to free up Collins. I think Luke Connolly has to start this time at 11 or even in the full forward line, but drifting, because he is one player who gets the ball, looks up and is dying to ping it to Mark Keane. Now, you don't have to go to town on Mark Keane, but even the fact that he's there, he's going to occupy the tip sweeper. Tip will play with a sweeper, and then Hurley and Collins can get a little bit of joy.
Well, I thought Luke Connolly would start. Well, I agree with what you say there about Cork. You know, they cut their cloth to suit the game that they wanted to play.
I think so.
And then they had the game changers to bring on. I don't think they'll start Mark Keane. Maybe I'm wrong. The reason I say that is because before his intervention against Kerry, he barely got a kick of the ball at all. And my fear would be for Mark Keane that if they start him from the start and that happens again, that they'll have to take him off and lack that game changer that they have to come on off the bench. And just not sure if he's like he hadn't had that much exposure to the team before the game against Kerry either. So with that in mind, I thought that they'd hold him in reserve, but that they'd start Connolly because they'll want, you know, they knew that if they hung in the game against Kerry and had him to bring on, you know, after 50, 60 minutes, be a big advantage, whereas they'll want to press home that advantage from the start the next day. Just what you say there about Michael Quinlan as well. I agree that I think they'll put him inside because I think the fear for Tipperary would be that if Quinlan was to start around the half-forward line, if I was Cork, I'd be looking to maybe put somebody like Sean Powder on him and keep him honest and keep him kind of maybe, you know, have him tracking back after Sean Powder all day long. So I put Sweeney and Powder in there as well. And the link that you mentioned in the Tipperary half-forward line being very influential, whether that's Coleman Kennedy or somebody like that can, you know, try and play more kind of disguised balls into the full forward line rather than something that a sweeper can snuff out easily. But I think Cork and Tip might play it different. I think Cork will hold Mark Keane in reserve. If I was Tip, I'd be starting Colin O'Riordan all day long. Obviously, I haven't seen what he's like, but know what a prospect he was. And I think it's better to go that way than die wondering, because I think Colin O'Riordan is going to be involved eventually anyway. So I think Tip have nothing to lose here. Just go with him to start and see what happens.
Yeah, I think O'Riordan will start as well. What do you think of the Mark Keane up front, sweeper covering him, and then play maybe Collins and Hurley just out in front of him? So now they're not getting covered by anybody. Like, I mean, I've talked about this last year with Kerry, with Clifford, and they played Geaney and James O'Donoghue just out in front of Clifford. And obviously, Ger, as you know, the sweeper will always cover the fella that's inside. So instead of having two inside and having the sweeper covering both of them, why not just play one inside? They will naturally cover Keane because of his potential fielding ability and goal scoring ability. And now you have Collins and Hurley running, you know, obviously all depending on what halfbacks do. But if you can occupy their halfbacks in some way, Collins and Hurley will obviously get more joy.
Yeah, look, it is a tactic that they might use. Like Cork, you know, the goal they got to win the game was a missed shot from Luke Connolly. In my view, he was going for a point and Keane made him.
It was.
They didn't strike me as a team that were drilling in long diagonal ball or long ball in the games I've seen them play so far this year at Cork, but that's not to say that they might give it a go this time round. If you bring out Hurley and you bring out Collins a couple of yards, if you pick up the break, and you have a man marker on Keane with the sweeper in front, like, you're still comfortable-ish as a defensive unit. You're probably going to have a plus one in your half back line as well. And if the ball is being kicked over your head as a centre back, what you're looking to do is sprint back in to provide additional cover, and then your midfielders are looking to sprint back kind of onto your men to pick up any breaks that are knocked out that bit further. But if they can, Cork, if we can get their spacing right where Keane holds his depth and Hurley and Collins are out maybe around the D and they're making later runs in, that creates a bigger gap. And it also will ask maybe more questions of the sweeper, whether he'll go closer to Keane or he'll come out to the 21-metre line. I don't know if it's something we'll see too often. I think it did work, but I think it worked by fluke as opposed to the design the last day.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. I think they just threw him in kind of at this stage. And I think Mark Keane, you're right, Connor, he didn't get a kick of it at all, which we know. But I think he'll have two extra weeks, you know, of training, the confidence of scoring the goal. And maybe it's something, you know, that we will see. I definitely do see Cork approaching this game in a different manner than they approached the Tipperary or the Kerry game, because, like, I mean, they were a very flamboyant attacking team last year in the Championship, and I think that, you know, the way the game panned out with Kerry, and I think more so with Kerry's tactics, turned that game into a more negative game than maybe Cork generally like to play. We'll get predictions on this one, lads, because we've two more games of equal importance to cover. What do you think, Conor, first?
I'm going for Cork to win by 4 to 5 points, Wade.
Okay, Chair?
I'm going to go with a low enough scoring game. Willie, maybe Cork by maybe 2 or 3 points.
Yeah, Cork by 2. You can make loads of arguments for Tipperary, and if David Powers, you know, comments are right that they do kind of level off, you know, play at the same level as their opposition. Because, like, I mean, if when you look at it, they're struggling over Limerick and they're struggling over Leitrim in a must-win game away, you know, and just Cork are at a bitter level to that. But then you bring in the fact that they're not afraid of Cork. You bring in, you know, the bloody Sunday, all that emotion. And I'm starting to convince myself to tip her in with a real shout in this one. So I'm going to go with a bit of a left field one and go for a draw match with Cork to come out in extra time.
Wow.
All happy with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. We'll take a break and we'll come back with the Ulster final analysis.
The best bit of advice he gave me back then was we were in the Glenroy on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
Right, so the Ulster final, lads, it wouldn't be an Ulster final if there wasn't some sort of mind games going on in the lead up to it. Declan Bonner's not happy with the pitch in Armagh. There's not much they can do about that. It didn't look to be in great shape for the Down Cavan game. But like almost like clockwork, Declan Bonner, we hear Mayo coming out with this with Aidan O'Shea sometimes, and he says, he's talking about Michael Murphy. He says he's a special player. He doesn't get the protection that he deserves, like everyone else that goes onto a playing pitch. Michael is well fit to look after himself. I felt there were a number of frees that we didn't get. We'll move on and get ready for next week. So he's putting that out there, you know. Mickey Graham is saying, Jesus, well, we can't let Declan Bonner get that kind of psychological edge up. And the referee's going to give Michael Murphy loads of frees now. I better say something about this, or else we're going to be at a serious disadvantage. So now Mickey Graham comes back and says, do the bigger teams get easier calls? Probably at times. The referee know these players by first names. The top teams are probably playing regularly with the top referees, and they probably know them a lot better. At times, they seem to be able to communicate stuff to referees, where if we ask a question, we're basically told to go away. So here we go. First, it was 1-0 to Donegal on Declan Bonner. Mikey Graham has come back. He's countered that comments in the media, Ger. So I see it as 1-1. I don't know. The referee doesn't know whose side to take now.
It is mind game. Definitely, it's a strategy that's discussed at management level. With their PR gurus or whoever they have, and it is important that you are, what we have seen. Any comment from the Cavan camp? If Bonner hadn't put out his comments, I don't know. But look, it's something that goes on, and it makes for a bit of entertainment in the build up to these matches, and something to talk about too. My experience with referees, Willie, is at senior and county level, most of the referees are decent referees, decent fellas. I've met one or two arrogant idiots in my time at playing inter county, but only a small few, and you meet those people everywhere. But generally speaking, the referees are going out there to have a solid game. They will have prepared themselves. With the referees, assessors looking at any particular fouls that wasn't being picked up on in previous weeks, and the recirculations or memos going around on the referees groups to focus in on these particular areas. And I think and Bonner's comment on Michael Murphy, I've been ran into by Michael Murphy a few times, and it hurts. Michael Murphy gives as good as he gets. I haven't played against him.
He does.
and his size is just because he's a bigger fella. Maybe he doesn't draw as many frees because he's so hard to knock off tilts. But so I wouldn't agree with that. And in the same way, I think Mickey Graham's comment, the smaller counties, I wouldn't agree with that either, but I can understand and appreciate why both managers put out the comments that they did put out.
What do you think, Conor, about the likes of buttering up a referee or whatever? Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, at inter-county level, I don't think referees are butter-upable or anything like that. But, like, I mean, you probably could do it at club level with a kind of a harmless referee if you wanted to, especially as a county player, you know, where you could maybe palm off him a little bit. I don't know. I these referees are practically professionals at this stage. I think too much can be read into, you know, getting the referee on site, especially the big ref, the really good referees.
Yeah, well, if they're the really good referees for a reason, because they shouldn't really be getting influenced by these players, no matter how high profile they are. I think it's definitely a case at club level. I mean, one of the most annoying things playing at club level is that, you know, you'll hear a referee address a county player by their first name, and they're the only, which is fine in some cases, but they're the only players on the pitch they're addressing by their first name. So nearly by definition, giving them preferential treatment. So club level, it's a possibility, but you'd like to think that the best referees, you know, aren't you know, they are the top referees because they don't get affected. Now, Michael Murphy, I think of any players, seems to talk to referees more than most, in my experience at least. And like, I was actually surprised in the Armagh game that, like, he's normally kind of calm and collected. And he said it was towards the later stage of the game when Donegal had the game won. And he said, "I won the fucking ball after a tackle." And it was the first time I'd seen him lose his cool to a referee in a long time. But generally, these lads aren't influenced and shouldn't be influenced. Just on Murphy as well, I would have a bit of sympathy for him, because the Armagh game, I thought that, you know, the Conan mentioned the incident on Monday where the four lads got around him after winning the ball, but they seemed to be tackling him high, as in their hands were above the ball. They weren't even going for the ball. They were just stopping him at the shoulders. And because Murphy is so bull strong, he was nearly getting through it, as opposed to maybe, you know, maybe trying to let on to the referee that he was fouled. It was nearly like a choke tackle. So, and we've mentioned in the past that, like, that's happened to Aidan O'Shea. And I actually think about Aidan O'Shea, he's probably got better at letting the referee, making sure the referee knows that he was fouled. But in general, like, yeah, in like, Declan Bonner is obviously going to say that before Sunday to try and get a bit of protection for Michael Murphy. And Mickey Graham hearing that is thinking, well, there's no way I'm letting Declan Bonner get an advantage. You just like to think that the referee is going to be sensible enough that he's not going to let them influence him either way.
Samir, we want to talk about this game a little bit, lads. And surely to God, here's a big criticism. I was trying to think back of last year's Ulster final. And a big criticism I had on the Monday after that final is that Cavan started with Gerard Smith, a corner forward, and he went back wing back, and they played with seven defenders, and they played defensively, and they were well beaten, other than, you know, a late rally at the end to make the score look respectable. And then I was just thinking, like, I mean, will they just go for it this time? We heard Mickey Graham's comments at halftime in the down game. Surely, Conor, this will be the message this week from the word go. Because what's the point of coming out? They've had the experience of an Ulster final, and maybe the tactics there were stay in the game. Surely they won't come back with those same tactics. I saw Mickey Graham talking about the lack of supporters and hype around Cavan, and he says, "You don't see anybody. Last year the place went berserk. We were in our first Ulster final in 18 years, and the supporters had nothing to cheer about, had nothing in the past to cheer about, rightly so. So there's none of that this year, and it's just another game. You just treat it as another game. And it is an Ulster final. It's basically just a game of football in the middle of winter. Why can't they just go for this? Galligan full forward, Conor Madden full forward, McKernan holding the 40, Martin Riley holding the 40. Stop this nonsense of trying to stay in the game and just treat this game like the second half in the down game, like you're beaten at halftime."
Yeah, I was listening to you discuss Mickey Graham's comment on Monday as well. And actually, Mark Faulkner was talking after the game. I think it was the We Are Cavan podcast or something like that. But he was saying that, like, that was their attitude for the second half was actually what they had said at the start of the game. But for some reason, they didn't do it. They were paralyzed by fear or something like that. And then
they wouldn't let go.
It took them to go 10 points down to actually suddenly decide, well, we're on our way out of the championship here if we don't cop on. And it was the same with Monaghan. It took a huge deficit. And the problem with that for Cavan is if they go behind against Donegal, if they go 3-4 points behind, never mind 10 points behind, there's no way back. They're dead. They're gone. That's it. So like this theory that they might kind of try and play their way into the game and then maybe bring on some game changers later on, that's not going to cut it. They have to go out. No. They have to go after this for the start. It mightn't be good enough. Donegal are better than them anyway. But at least, as we've said in the last number of weeks with regard to a number of teams, die with your boots on as opposed to die wondering what might have happened had you not gone for it from the start. And just to go back to that game last year, Willie, as well, that they made changes to the full forward line immediately. They changed the complete composition of the full forward line immediately before the game. And it was nearly like an admission of right, we're going to kind of try and have what we hold here. And then they ended up conceding 124. And they made it look decent at the end, I think, when they got a goal late on.
Yeah.
But they were 8 points down, I think, at halftime. They got back to 6. Jamie Brennan got a goal with 20 minutes to go, and it was game over. And it was just, you know, the scoreline was cosmetic at that stage. So not only have they their games against Monaghan, their games against Antrim to a lesser degree, and definitely their games against Down, but they played the Donegal team a little over a year ago, and they know what happens if they go defensive from the start. So they just have to, Mickey Graham, whatever he did at halftime the last day, now Faulkner reckons he did it from the start, but they have to absolutely avoid at all costs that complacency from the start and from it.
Yeah, now we have to obviously point out that there was a strong wind in that game, which had an effect on both halves. So, like, I mean, obviously we're not completely forgetting about that. But here's the thing, and this is something that is very obvious is going to happen. If you play Galligan and you play Madden in there, now Madden blows hot and cold. Listen, maybe he's on a hot streak after that half. Let's start him, right? Play Galligan full forward. We know what Donegal are going to do. We know they're going to drop Hugh McFadden back in front of them. We know he's going to run straight back almost like Colm Kavanagh. Now, here's the thing. I always used to be of the opinion, why don't you get the midfielder to follow him in? That's one option. Follow him in. And even Colm Kavanagh on this show admitted to me he couldn't understand why teams didn't do it. He said Donegal did it once, but it didn't really work out and nobody else tried it. Bizarre. Now, here's the other thing. If you say McFadden's going back in, and we all know this is going to happen, McFadden will go back in, especially with two big men like that. Who's your spare man out the field? And how are we going to use that spare man out the field to hurt Donegal, right? So will the message in training on Thursday night be, who's our spare man? So whoever it's going to be, say it's Gerard Smith, say it's going to be somebody at the back or maybe a midfielder. I wouldn't say it's a midfielder because Donegal will push out, you know, someone on that midfielder. That will be part of their plan as Hugh McFadden drops. So say it's a defender. Gerard Smith, we'll use him for example. He's a decent attacking defender. Why would the Cavan game plan on Tuesday night, Thursday night this week is to every time we reach an impasse where Donegal have got back behind the ball, who's our spare man? Look for him at all times. Let him make a nuisance out of himself. Let him be the spare man going in, following a fella trying to break a line for a pop pass. And then if somebody goes to him, we have another spare man. Some advantage has to be gained, Jer, because we all know that teams are kind of pairing off now, so the attacking team will move up on most of the zonal players and it'll almost be a one-on-one. Now McFadden will be the odd one out in that because he'll be covering the full forward line, and the Cavan spearman will be the other one odd one out. So Cavan have to completely make a nuisance out of this fella. Am I making sense here?
Well, I'm just writing down everything on the Vision 4 next year. I'm perching up on the sweeper. Colm Kavanagh's, that's a great idea in fairness, and it's I know what a lot of teams do if there's a sweeper in there, what they ask the forward who's being marked to do is to kind of come out and stand beside the sweeper, and there's nearly two fellas marking you.
Yeah,
that kind of eliminates him a bit. It's a fair point. It's a fair strategy, and it's something that I'd certainly try if I was Cavan in trying to maximise that free man. Connor kind of mentioned it in his comments there. You know, whatever Cavan do, if Cavan have a 10 out of 10 game, and Donegal play 7-8 out of 10, for me, Donegal will still win. They just have too much firepower there. If Cavan, and we'll know very, very early when the ball is thrown in, whether they're going to set up like they have set up for their previous games against Down and Monaghan and that, if they're going to be just trying to stay in the game and give themselves an opportunity in the latter stages of the second half. I would say it's very hard, Woody, for a team to break out of that defensive way of playing. And certainly up in Ulster, I think it is a challenge because a lot of teams come up there set up in similar ways, and it's like it's embedded in their mindset versus a Cork, who are more of an offensive team than Warden Kerry, and were able to kind of set up defensively against Kerry, as Kerry were in some ways setting up defensively too, but they just weren't empowered mentally, Kerry, and didn't take their opportunities. But if Cavan push up, if you're a Cavan player and you're looking ahead to the game the weekend, I think it would be a great challenge to be given from management to play a different, more aggressive type of football and ask proper man-to-man questions of the Donegal players and ask real questions of them and see how they perform then. Yeah. And again, I still only see the result going one way.
Yeah, it's probably hard to see past the Donegal win here. Connor, what do you think of, you know, when you're playing a team that very much have their defensive tactics flagged to you? There's really no excuse in that scenario for not having a counter plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, as good as Donegal have, as you said, it's fairly clear what they're going to do. It's just, I suppose when I mentioned earlier about kind of, you know, it was more to do with Cavan's mindset than, you know, to do with tactics and kind of based on the breeze and stuff like that. Because I think it was the more of a mindset change as much as a tactical change against, you know, their games to date. There's kind of changed it. So what Cavan need to do, Willie, is give Donegal something to think about. Like Armagh, for me, gave Donegal very little to think about, and the game was over by halftime. And Tyrone did it at times in the game against Donegal, but not enough, you know, just to, you know, whether it was with putting Conor McKenna and Derek Canavan inside and letting ball into them, or, you know, just not letting Donegal have things at their ease. Donegal played Armagh completely on their own terms. Now, as I said, I think Donegal are long enough around. This Donegal team are long enough around. There's enough versatility. There's enough tactical flexibility that they can react to whatever Cavan are going to throw at them. But I just hope that Cavan do throw something at them. As opposed to, that was the most demoralising thing about the Armagh game, is that like we thought, while they weren't at their level, we thought that Armagh had a bit about them to give Donegal a bit of a test, and they gave them no test whatsoever. So I just, for the sake of the game, I just hope the Cavan are able to do that the next day and show more what they were like in the second half against Monaghan and Down than they did in the first half of those games where they were very poor.
Yeah, okay, predictions here, Ger, quickly.
Well, just to throw in a bit of historical information here, right? This will be Donegal's fourth time to win a three in a row in their history if they do win the weekend. And a question for you there quickly, which team was the last team to do it, to win three in a row in Ulster? And it just shows you how competitive Ulster is.
Well, you should have been listening to the show last week or the week before, Ger, because that's Armagh. It's a very easy answer to that. Right, let me get a prediction. Don't try to catch me out and stuff like that, Ger. This is my job.
Yeah, well done. All right.
Go on, give me a prediction.
Donegal could win. Oh, they could give them a point if they want. 8-9 points, Donegal.
Jesus. Okay, we might have to revisit that. Connor, what about you?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say, Willie, after all I've said there, the handicap is -7, and I think Donegal will beat that. So.
Right, okay. Yeah, it's hard to know. It's a good handicap. It's making you think. You know a good handicap when you're not sure which way. I think a Donegal win for me as well, but you just love to see a good spirited performance from Cavan, because, like, I mean, to be fair to them, they've won an awful lot of fans this year, the way they've come back and the way they've been playing. So we'll see how that goes. Right, we'll come back and we'll have a look at the Leinster final.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even start, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day. Thank you.
All right, so Dublin versus Meath, lads. This is a big rivalry that probably isn't really a rivalry anymore, unfortunately, with Dublin's dominance of the Leinster Championship. I want to bring your mind back, Ger, to 2010. Meath scored 5 goals against Dublin. There was a young man called Ger Brennan lining out at left half back. And I remember being on Hill 16 watching this one, just kind of seeing these goals flying in, wondering, Jesus, what is actually happening here? I'm nearly sure Dennis Bastic was full back that day, which was a weird one. Maybe he was. No, actually, he wasn't. He was full back maybe the year before. I don't know what your memories of that. They scored 5. Was it 5-9 the last day as well? The very same score as they scored against you that day.
The history books, yeah, they might repeat themselves. Like even if you had no Dublin defenders there, which you didn't really, but for a team to score 5 goals against Stephen Cluxton is outrageous, because he's one of the best shot stoppers in the game. And look, it was just one of those, I suppose from a Meath point of view, beautiful moments in sports where everything just goes your way, and the momentum is with you. Every ball you hit has been struck beautifully, and there's nothing or very little the opposition can kind of do to stop that momentum. You're right, I was in the defence that day, wing back, and the game has gotten away from us before we knew it, and yeah, those goals killed us. They just ran down us, strong running in numbers, but again, great finishes too to get past Stephen Cluxton. It's hard to believe it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think our own Keane Ward scored a brilliant goal. I think that might have been the last goal of the day. It was just an incredible day, and in fact, I don't mean great days that Dublin were capable of being beaten in Leinster, but like, I mean, they haven't been beaten since. It's 10 in a row they're going for now at the weekend, and it's just such a snore fest that, like, I mean, the Leinster Championship is dead in the water. And like, I mean, if we're being honest here, we're going to look at Meath's chances here, and they don't have a chance. Like, I mean, they're good forwards. Killian O'Sullivan, John Small is going to go on him, and he never usually gives him a kick of it. You'd imagine Shane Walsh should be picked up by Fitzsimons, and Fitzsimons is one of the stickiest players in the game, and Merchant might pick up young Morris, who's been banging in the goals. You know, like, I mean, Dublin, Connor have perfect matchups for the Meath forwards, and the Meath forwards aren't really, like, if you're looking at the Meath team, number 1 to 9, they're not far off, you know, Super 8, the top teams. It's from 10 until 15, I would see them as probably falling a little bit short. And the good ones that they have, Dublin have a match for them.
Yeah, we're saying that after Meath have scored 12 goals in 2 championship games, and we're questioning the quality of the Meath forwards with reason too. I mean, like, even just looking back in the Kildare game last weekend as well, I think that the top scorer in the forward line was maybe 1-1. I think Jordan Morris and Killian O'Sullivan got that, but those goals, the goals that Meath got last weekend, they came about because of Kildare mistakes. And like, Dublin just aren't going to make those mistakes. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was the same against Wicklow as well. They're coming up against a team that just have very little weakness, and they're not going to be able to capitalize on it in the same way. So, I get carried away by seeing the scorelines that Meath have racked up, thinking, oh, they might give something to Dublin. And then, like, Keane Ward was on Monday describing Meade's performance against Kildare as their worst in 18 months. So, you know, you're going to expect a backlash to a certain degree, but a backlash in this game might mean that Meath are within 4 or 5 points at halftime before likely going on to lose by potentially double figures. It's depressing to think about it, but it's the reality, and it's where it is. And as you said, whatever advantages Meath might have, Dublin just trumped them immediately. You know, and that's before the throw. And like, and even if they weren't, if those matchups weren't to work out for some reason, you'd be confident that Dublin have somebody either in the starting 15 or ready to come off the bench, that if it doesn't work, well, then they're going to have somebody else that's going to make it work for them. And that's before we consider the damage that Dublin could do at the other end of the pitch. So it's a chastening thing to think about coming into a Leinster final, especially one against one between Dublin and Meath. But it's the reality, I'm afraid, and we're looking at potentially another cakewalk this weekend.
Yeah, the Meath forward scored, or the Meath team scored 14 points against Wicklow. Now, they got 7 goals. They scored 9 against Kildare. Now, they got 5 goals. Now, you're looking at those 12 goals, and I'm saying, Ger, if they get 1 goal against Dublin, they'll be doing very, very well. You know, I'd actually, in a way, be concerned about those 2 scorelines coming in against a team like Dublin, unless they completely change their game plan, rip up the script, and start trying to go for goals against Dublin.
Well, I would actually look at the league game in Parnell Park a month or so ago. I know it was only league. It was in Parnell Park on a heavier pitch, and the score line, Dublin 120, Meath 19 points. And there's, you know, very, very closely, it's nearly the same teams with a couple of introductions here and there who are going to take to the field this weekend for the Leinster final. So I would say Meath will take great confidence from that league game. Woolley, I think they will go out with little, certainly less fear than they might have had for Dublin. And I think if I was Andy McEntee, I'd be looking usually towards that league performance and what they did well in that game as a way of possibly breaking down the Dublin defence. But, you know, when you talk about the matchups that Dublin have and their defence for the Meath forwards, I would agree with those matchups. If I was picking the team, I'd be putting those three Dublin players on those three Meath marquee forwards, and they will have a good handle on them. I think there's a massive onus and responsibility on Meade's half-back line and midfield to be able to drive forward and to turn the Dublin defence, to get in behind the initial defensive line of Dublin and to force Dublin to defend running towards their own goal. And it's only then will you see opportunities, or real opportunities, pop up for potential goals or for the likes of Killian O'Sullivan and Shane Walsh and that, to be able to pop over a couple of scores. But that's what I would be looking at now if I was Meade. I'd be looking at the taking confidence from the league, and then I'd be looking at breaking hard from half back midfield and running the ball hard through the hands to try to turn the Dublin defence. And that's probably your best chance.
But here, just on that, Gerard, though, like, I mean, what team running hard at Dublin has ever done well on Dublin? Like, Dublin are the best team in the tackle. They're the best team at this running game. And I see this as a weakness from teams, that the teams that trouble Dublin, like Mayo and Kerry, have based their tactics around more of a kicking game. And like isolating Johnny Cooper in a one-on-one, or isolating, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity on Merchant as a cornerback potentially. What team running at Dublin from the half-back line? And I think this is where a lot of teams are getting bogged down, and they're getting, I don't know why they're all doing the same thing and continually not working. And the only opportunity a team against Dublin ever gets for a one-on-one is maybe winning a ball off a long kick-out. And sure, that doesn't happen because Fenton's an absolute animal in midfield. So like, I mean, they're dropping a lot of players back, right? And even Leash, Dublin conceded 11 points to Westmeath. Like, they laughed at Westmeath. They conceded 7 to Leash. They laughed at Leash. And obviously Leash left 3 players up, whereas Westmeath only left 1. But it was still a version of the same thing. Your half-back line dropping back to try and help a defence. And then Dublin not following them, maybe follow one of them following. So now you have a situation where Dublin have 2 kind of spare men around the half-back line midfield. So even if Dublin do kick the ball away at some point, you're coming running up the field, now, because there's no kick option. There's no kick pass ever, you know, in front of you. And you're trying to run through a blue wall of big, strong, physical men, and you can't get it up there. And by the time you do get it up there within striking distance, the 2 halfbacks that haven't followed are kind of half covering your full forward line. So you have no game, you have no offensive game plan at all. Your whole game plan is based around this outdated notion that you have to drop your whole half back line, half forward line, back into the defence to help them out.
So to probably expand on what I was getting at, Woody, right, is if the kick pass is on from a half back, right, obviously your kick pass forward would be your go-to option to move the ball forward as quick as possible. But the support has to come from the middle eight, from the half back line and your 2 midfielders driving hard off the shoulder. And then the example you described there, where Dublin have a few bodies back, and you know, there was a couple of times in the Westmeath game where I remember Dublin had nearly the whole team behind the opposition 65 because they had tracked back. And we'll probably see that the weekend. But if you can keep a couple of forwards, 3-4 forwards up there for Meath to keep those extra Dublin defenders honest, well, then you are putting your defence somewhat at more of a risk. But what I would credit Andy McEntee for is the physical shape and conditioning that he's gotten the Meath players to, And I would argue that they're not a million miles. They're a lot closer to Dublin physically than we're probably giving them credit for. And I think there's an opportunity if you're in the Meath camp to play a more aggressive go forward game, commit, leave an extra few forwards up there, four forwards up there, and in the way you described how Mayo play and Kerry play, it is a kick passing, forward passing game, but they are getting up in support. They're playing a high press. So if Meath are turned over in the Dublin defence, at least they still have 4 to 5 players up there who can put a decent press of the ball coming out, as opposed to just conceding the ground straight away and, like you say, dropping all your half forward back line, which I wouldn't do. You know?
Yeah, I don't think you can do. And when you look at O'Connor at the Dublin defence, you have Michael Fitzsimons. He's not your Paddy McGrath, Owen Bongaller. He's not just going to take off up the field and drag you out of position. Johnny Cooper has stopped doing it. He used to do it. The whole game was based on it. Whether it's he's not at an age now where he can do it, or whether he's kind of sees himself at trying to perfect the art of defending, who knows? Owen Merchant probably won't do it all that often. He might do it once or twice. You have John Small, who'll man mark Killian O'Sullivan. So there's very little excuse outside of your traditional wing backs like McDade and McCarthy, who, you know, go forward to support attack, which is normal. There's very little excuse for Meade in this game to say we're going to leave 4 forwards up there. And we are going to have some men ahead of the ball if a Dublin pass goes astray, or if we, you know, are lucky enough to get a turnover, that when we turn it over, we have an option of, you know, having a credible attacking game plan.
Yeah, I think that out ball is crucial. You've mentioned it, and like you've mentioned a few times before about the having that link man on the 40 or around the 40, and I think a lot of top teams that play against Dublin don't have that, and it's something that Mayo and Kerry particularly did well. Jason Doherty, Kevin McLaughlin for Mayo, Sean O'Shea, maybe Stephen O'Brien, the likes of them for Kerry. That there was just one thing about like watching teams against Dublin is that they just get penned in. And there's nothing, there's no out ball whatsoever. Their only option is to turn around and hand pass to somebody else, by which stage Dublin just swarm them, end up turning over the ball in their own half, get a score, and then they're looking at penning them in for the kick out again. So you'd like to think that, like, you know, Andy McIntyre will have watched Dublin beat Laois by 22 points, Westmeath by 11 points at their absolute ease.
Yeah.
And know that you have to do something different, and that will involve, listen, you're going to
see Meade, the problem is, Connor, Meade's game plan isn't all that different. I've seen enough of them. That's Meade's problem.
I know, but we're talking about having to cut your thought to suit, you know, to measure, and like that, this is it. Like Andy McIntyre can look at it at that and think that, well, listen, I can play this way and I'm going to go down. It mightn't be the same amount as, it mightn't be 11 points like Laois, or it mightn't be 22 or like 11 points like Westmeath, or 22 points against Laois, but you're going to go down comprehensively, as opposed to trying to ripping up the script a little. Go back to get some traditional Meade about them. Do you know what I mean? And go more directed and have that out ball and be more, you know, take a few more risks. And then, yeah, it might go at the end up the other way and he might have egg in his face, but there's more, you know, at least that to me is a better prospect of at least trying that than doing what Westmeath have done and doing what Laois have done and likely losing by double scores.
Yeah, they don't have the forwards to play the 1970s style drop kick well, the ball that I was suggesting Laois didn't do. They don't have the forwards, so that's why it's even more important. Number one, that Dublin will probably give them 4 defenders that won't drag them out of position. Number two, that the Meath forwards need a certain ball that they have to go through the lines. Their inside forward needs good ball, through the lines ball, like ball from their half forward line, not shite ball. And that's why I think that, you know, there's no excuse for Meade this Saturday. I might be sounding like a broken record here with these teams, but I'm just getting sick of it. And even McGuinness said it on Sky. Most teams are playing a version of the same thing. Isn't that terrible? Isn't that just shocking that most teams are playing a similar kind of version of the same old thing? I give ye credit, Jerry, you're trying to break that mould with Carlo. I give John Mahan in awfully credit. He's trying to break that system, going out to play a bit of traditional football. I think it will eventually get back to traditional, more traditional football. We just have to get this nonsense out of managers' heads.
It's well, Woody, right? I talking to a few Laois pals and other mates as well, right? Like Laois were the scoreline after 20 minutes, right? Last week it was relatively close, and Westmeath were doing their best to stay with Dublin as well. what happened with the likes of the Leashes of this world at the moment is they go out onto the pitch knowing that they're going to be bad anyway. Whether they admit it publicly, I'm sure they don't. They do a bit of shouting and the talking in the dressing room beforehand, but in their heart of hearts, they don't actually believe what they're saying. As opposed to going out, and this is the psychology of it, Woody, if the players were to execute the game plan that the manager wants them to do on each set play, and I know we're talking about set plays a few weeks ago, but each play, execute that game plan to the best of their ability for the 70-odd minutes, they will be far, far closer to Dublin than what we currently see, because players begin to switch off, they stop tracking back up front, and just overlaps everywhere, and then fellas are getting onto each other, they go into themselves, and then all of a sudden the floodgates open, and the result that we've seen last week for Dublin over Leash is something we've become quite accustomed to. So I would say in between the years, and that's where Meath, I think, will be a bit stronger than a Leash and a Westmeath. I think in between the years, McEntee will have them fairly roiled up. And that league game in Parnell Park, it was actually enjoyable match to watch. There was a few little, not fisticuffs, but there was a good bit of argy-bargy in it from the Meath players and Dublin players, which was no doubt encouraged by Andy McEntee and Desi Farrell alike, I'm sure. And I think we're going to see a couple of those little skirmishes now on the weekend too. But I think Meath will have a far better mental resolve to stick with Dublin for a far greater time. And to go and to fully agree with what you've said, Woolley, and Connor said there as well, is if Meath go out and play the way we've seen them play the last couple of games, you know, the results will be probably inevitable. And Andy McEntee will probably not have learned anything particularly new, as opposed to tweaking things, going a bit more traditional. As you say, a bit of a higher press, a higher squeeze, like we see from the Kerry and Mayo when they have pushed up and close and have a ding dong battle at us, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So listen, there's not much point in doing predictions here, lads, is there? Like, I mean, we'll all go for Dublin and we'll leave it there for the day.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Right, we'll leave it there. Like, I mean, it will be interesting to see what Meath do. And like, I have to give Meath credit. Sometimes I feel I'm overly critical on Meath. They beat Kildare fair and square last week, you know, which was a who's number two in Leinster match. So, you know, they deserve a lot of credit. We'll see. And they haven't been that far off the top teams. It's Dublin. So like, I mean, we're qualifying everything that we're saying in that. Like, I think this year could be the easiest All-Ireland Dublin ever win. Sorry about that, Connor. I know that's hard for you to hear. I'm sure you're all dreaming out there. Right, come here, lads. We'll leave it there. And we'll be back on Monday and we'll review the matches at the weekend. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their houses for 10 years.